It's Wednesday, October 3rd, 2007, and you're listening to episode 72 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 57 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Adam.
My name is Luke.
My name is John.
Still no text with the release of Halo 3 this week.
Yeah, he must be at WoW. Scarlet Monastery or Zul'Farah.
No, you guys are on ST now, aren't you?
Yeah, we're hitting Sunken Temple. All we're right. Raiding Sunken Temple with 20. It's awesome.
Oh my god, that's disgusting.
Unlike Adam,
they let you do that?
No.
Oh, okay.
Unlike Adam, who's just wasting time on WoW, Tex is at work making that dollar.
Making out with Master Chief.
And with the Halo 3 coming out, since he's on the multiplayer live.
Yeah, you stumbled there because
team.
You started picturing Tex and Master Chief making out.
No, I did not. You've just hit a point where there's this blank spot in my mind. There are certain comments where you'll make them and I'll picture them and they will bother me. There are other
bottom
comments.
Line, Halo 3 is out, Tex is busy.
Right.
And I wish I was busy playing Halo 3, but I'm recording a podcast.
Yeah, you're not.
Nobody else wasted 10 minutes trying to get this thing started.
The rest of us don't really care about
Halo
3.
So we are not back up to full staff, but it's not just three of us this time. Adam is here to bring order to the show, as some user suggested, and I'm not...
I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, those users are wrong. Adam would have been drunker than anybody.
Comes from Adam.
I got to hold John in check, too.
Yeah, I can't blossom if you're here, Adam.
You guys can't see, you know, what we're doing, but oftentimes Adam uses his ruler to slap John on the wrist when he's about to talk.
Yeah.
The negative
I cut that
reinforcement
noise out,
is,
though, so you don't ever
hear it. Yeah, he stabs John underneath the table. Announcements. We actually have an announcement about announcements, and bear with me, because this is actually better than it sounds.
Only we can do this.
No. We're going to try something a little bit different here, because we have so much crap going on that the announcement section of the show is becoming entirely too long.
Yeah, but that's awesome, because we don't have to come up with content for this.
So,
no, it sucks.
Yeah, not coming up with content is precisely how to sync the show. So what we are going to start doing is, starting next week, there are going to be no announcements outside of this one this week, but starting next week, we are instead just going to mention topics. And then the show notes, we will have links to forum posts that explain it. So we're not re-explaining contests every week or re-explaining social engagements every week.
Thank God.
We're hoping the announcements were supposed to be like 2 or 3 minutes at the start of the show.
They've become 20.
Yeah, they've become like 20. So next week, we're going to shrink them down to these little links. This week, there are no announcements outside of this one. We're just going to dive straight back into the content.
It is my announcement that it is a firm mistake to have announcements.
Thank you for sharing, John.
This
Wrap
mic
it up.
Smells like fish.
That's not a mic.
What?
I'm not kidding. It's a little weird. I'm a little freaked out by it.
Hey, I haven't been here in almost half a month, so
John,
I have no part in this.
Yes, Dan?
John does eat a lot of anchovies.
Yeah, anchovies. That's what I eat.
And then uses that mic. I don't know if that's what's causing your issue.
I think I can take it, but it's a little weird.
All righty. Topic number one today comes from Rachel, who asked a very good question.
Rachel, we don't have women who listen to this
show.
Yeah,
no women listen.
She's not one of like the three that have outed themselves, but she is now. Welcome.
So Rachel asked this question. How do you keep track of your GM notes? Now, let me frame this question specifically.
Yeah.
Let me frame this question specifically.
All right, go ahead and frame it.
All right, we've talked about on this show the different ways of writing plots or whatever, you know, freestyling versus having really detailed notes and everything in between. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is if they go in a particular town and they visit, I don't know, a blacksmith that you did not expect them to visit. And so on the spot, you give this person a name and a description, and you mentioned the blacksmith is on the east side of the town. How do you keep track of all these little things you are coming up with on the spot so that in future games, you aren't paging back and forth in every which way through your GM notes?
I GM so passively that I just wait for them to bring it up. And if they bring up something I didn't put in there, I really don't know. So it's there now. Except they can never learn this. No, not really.
Well, you know, it's actually kind of funny, is this really isn't an answer. I have a better answer. But with the plots in my games, my greatest strength as a game master is my ability to write plots. That I can write these really complex plots. And I would say I'm far better at that than I am in any of the other aspects of GMing. And they've gotten complex to the point that typically in my games,
somebody is a dedicated note taker.
Yeah, there's a dedicated note taker, and typically I can rely on that person.
That's not a joke.
That's not a joke. because there is someone that will say, hey, we should go back and talk to that guy we talked to before. What was his name? And Michael looked back through his notes, and I just sit there and pretend I already know the answer.
Oh, making an inventory of the people who are about to play in this D&D game, do you think that's going to happen?
No, I know it's not.
Okay, good.
I actually left because I've been with a few groups who did that, and it's all been the same people, and we just didn't think a lot of other people did, because we would keep track of just about everything that was said, just in case.
No, it's ridiculous, because they're like, well, this one thing happened in the first game. Okay, all right, let's move on. No, we have two pages of stuff written on it. Let's go back and read it and then analyze. Oh, are you serious?
The note taker should be rewarded, though, in my opinion. That's one, like of those, one of those player contributions that should be rewarded with something.
The reward is not going back and reading the notes. That's not the reward. That's the
reward is experience points and gold pieces.
There you go. That's, what more do you
that's
need?
That's the point of
GM leniency.
Obviously.
All right, so keeping track of GM notes, my first bit of advice is be prepared to take them. One of the things, no, I'm serious. One of the things that I find that screws me up the most, particularly when I get deeper and deeper into a campaign, is I have in front of me my plot notes for that specific game. And what will happen is on there, they might ask about like a second in command on a particular spaceship or something. I write down his name somewhere in the margin. And now 6 games later, they may be asking about something that was either written in the main notes or was written in the margins, and I'm now flipping back and forth and reading up and down my plot trying to find
I've seen this happen.
What somebody's name was. So one of the things that I would recommend is if you are going to take those kind of notes, have something ready ahead of time. For example, make a little chart for NPCs. Name, quick note on appearance, what they do, where they're at. So if you mention a shopkeeper in a particular town, you can write down notes real quick. Okay, shopkeeper, this is the shop he runs. This is personality. And you don't want to stop the game dead, but just write a few key words to kind of jog your memory later. Take really short and simple notes just so you can kind of remember what you said. Similarly, if you're going to deal with locations or factions, try, and this is going to vary from game to game, but if I was running a game that had a lot of politics in it, that I might have like an event section and write down, you know, event done by this party against this party, kind of here's what happened. But have like a notepad already set up to take the kinds of notes that I think I'm going to need later in a way that's easier to find than paging through 30 or 40 pages that represent the campaign over the past 6 months.
And for events like that, I do something that I think a lot of other people do, which is make a timeline of how things go, assuming no PC interruption, which of course happens. But from there, I draw little skew lines outward, see what the players did, X off things in the future, which obviously are not going to happen now because they killed grandma or whatever. And
really, that's a good idea.
That's an easy, central way of doing the spine of your game, if not the actual flesh of it.
You know, something else along those lines that I've done a few times is things that I think I'll need to reference later, I highlight in some way in the game notes that if I name something or name a place or give a description of a spaceship or give a layout of a kingdom or whatever, that I might underline or bold that, because I know the plot point's not going to occur again, but here's the who's, what's, and where's that I might have to refer back to later. So as I'm skimming down my notes, I can quickly locate at least proper nouns so I can try and figure something out about the person. And I guess some of that is in the way I write my game notes, because I might write an event, but if they meet somebody, I'll say they run into a certain NPC. And if I don't have a separate sheet for NPC descriptions, I'll say it's the NPC looks like this and does these things. So let's say I just bold her name. You know, once again, I know the plot points that come beneath that. What she says and does is not going to occur again, but at least I can real quickly find that basic description of who she is and what she's like all over again.
See, the stuff you're highlighting is just about the only stuff I write down, because the players are really only going to remember the pertinent points anyway. You know, like you said, the second in command of spacecraft, they're going to know he's second in command, and he's going to know how they treated him, and that's all they're going to remember.
Well, he treated them with beard.
Some of that, though, is going to depend on the game style, because, for example, in your games, where you run things that are more player-driven, that may be the case. But in my games that are more plot-driven, I can't get away with that, because they won't just remember, well, there's some guy who is the second in command of the ship. They will remember, well, he liked something in particular. Like, he mentioned in passing that he was a big fan of some sport. So they're going to go talk to him to try and kind of get on his good side, because they're trying to win him over as an ally or get something.
Yeah, I'm that obscurantist ass at the table who's going to remember stuff like that and then call you on it later.
I cannot.
I'm not.
You know, I know in a lot of gaming groups that people tend to shorthand things, say, yeah, we don't care. It's the old wizard who, you know, whatever. And Seamus repeatedly makes fun of this in Game of the Rings, and he's making fun of, he's well, I'm sure he will make fun of it again in Chainmail Bikini as a new comic. Some of the ways that my players play and the kinds of games that I run, because of the fact that they're so plot intensive and because of the fact that I do a lot of foreshadowing and a lot of careful, subtle pushes through the things the NPCs say and do, I have to remember the details.
And so do the players. It's obnoxious.
See, in the player-driven games, I mean, it's important too, because that's what the players have to bite on. But usually when they bite on it, it becomes pertinent, and it becomes something you're going to remember. It's not one of those obscure little facts that you have to hide away. The obscure facts, I find, tend to fade away, unless they are foreshadowing something you remember or something you have to have the players remember.
That's another point. And then GMs know what really is important.
Yeah, so the GM knows that's pertinent.
Well, okay. But here's the thing. That is both the problem and the solution.
I agree.
Because the fact that the GM alone knows what's pertinent is the exact reason why your players may be chasing down.
That's why you always wink. every time something important comes up, you wink and make it subtle. But if they're paying attention, they'll know.
No, but here's my point. Here's my point. If you have a game, let's say you're running a game, you as a GM, let's say out of the 10 NPCs that have come up so far, know that 3 were important and 7 were just background fluff. But your players may not realize that. And all of a sudden, later in the game, they remember that so-and-so happened to be on a ship when something happened. And so now they are trying to track down this guy that to you was background noise. Mm-hmm. And they're all of a sudden wanting to track this guy down, and they want to make a major RP ordeal with him. And now I've got one or two options. As the GM, I can metagame and say, no, don't worry about him. He doesn't know anything, which to me, I don't think is a good way to GM. I mean, at least at first, if it goes too far,
well,
maybe
yeah,
you need to
stop
it.
Well, yeah, because if they track him down, that's like 2 hours worth of content you don't have to come up with.
If you go too far, there may be this point where you guys say, look,
course,
guys.
Option two is, oh my God, yeah, it was him. Good job, player character. Or maybe that's option three.
But, you know, the point being, though, that because of that fact, I have them a lot of times pull out on me these characters that I don't remember anything about. Because
pulling
they,
out, come on, it's the 21st century.
They weren't important to me, so... This is an abstinence-only podcast.
See, John?
They're very important to everyone. Yeah, you sure are, Adam. You're that moral authority standing over my shoulder.
That's right. Wow.
Telling
a moral
you not to
authority.
Pull out?
Yeah.
Also on GM Notes, I found lately with the dawn of wireless internet and the like that I actually do have at least a player usually with a laptop at the table. And I'm big on making wikis now because wikis are very easy to organize.
Whoa, okay. Slow down. Let's start.
Oh my! You guys remember in episode 2 where the first thing Dan says is, "I still hate buzzwords like wiki."
Yeah. Well, hold on for a minute.
A buzzword is a thing. It's a noun.
It's how it is.
It is now.
Yeah.
It's a buzzword that's been made into a noun.
Kind of like podcasting, huh?
Oh.
Well, exactly. And honestly, I wish they hadn't called it podcasting, as I say at various conventions. Whenever,
I don't have an iPod.
Dancasting.
Yeah. Whenever we speak.
Dancasting.
Whenever we speak at a convention. And we work through the history of podcasting. I will never hesitate to say I hate the word podcast. I wish they had not called it that, because John's exactly right. The first response they usually get from someone who doesn't know what they are is, oh, that's cool, but I don't have an iPod. So, but
no, dude, it's cool. You can get it on your iPhone now.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
your $100 off iPhone.
Download FTB really ringtones.
Cool. Oh, my God.
Oh, there's a moneymaker right there.
No, we have one.
Yeah.
We have one.
Really?
Yeah. Somebody made a ringtone out of John's Fear and Loathing in Gondor spiel.
Yeah, that's right. That was what it was. I remember it was something.
Yeah.
This is incredible. Why is this the first time I'm hearing about this?
Yes. I haven't heard
it
about
was on
this.
The forum.
I don't know. I've only mentioned this on the forums.
I haven't seen the Twitter picture yet.
90,000 posts
on the
forum.
Linked on the forums. All right. Anyway, Luke,
the ringtone was linked on the forums?
I think so.
I want to download it.
Where the hell
know
was
what
this
we're
at?
After
I thought I emailed. Anyway. On right, with the program.
Right. Anyway, Luke, let's start back on what you were just saying, because I want to back up a bit here. Okay?
Don't back up too far.
I want you to talk
nobody's
about...
Nobody's pulling out then.
You've opened a can of worms here that I did not see coming. A wiki for a role-playing game. Start from the start. What got you using wikis for a role-playing game? And can you explain how you use them? Let's talk about how you even integrate these into your game.
Well, I don't. This isn't used at the table except for reference by me or one of the players if they want to look something up.
Let's define a wiki real quick, too, just in case anyone out there does not know.
If somebody's listening to this on if they've downloaded the MP3 from this internet thing, I'm pretty sure they know what a wiki is.
All right, well, a wiki, I'm not going to make that assumption because we've had some people ask us some things in the past.
And when we record the Fear the Boot record albums and release them on vinyl, they won't need to have gone to the internet.
Right. But
a true 1986 fashion.
A
86.
This would precede 76. Yeah, you're in the age of tape cassettes, my dear boy.
I was
boy.
Going for a BattleTech joke, but screw you guys.
Okay.
Continue.
But so with the wiki, what you have is basically an online keyword searchable encyclopedia or database or whatever you want to call
it. I like thinking of it as a database.
Where you can make nice little topical entries that all cross-reference each other. So you could say that you have this place with these people, and those people are all clickable links that go to the entries on those people. Mm-hmm. And that may have links back to the places they've been or the things that they've done or major events in the history.
Right.
And you can edit and add entries on the fly, assuming you have the rights to do so. And the wiki software, there's many of them out there, and most of them are freeware. So you could download this and, I presume, with minimal technical knowledge,
like I have,
set up one of these on the web or on your local computer, and you could fill one of these out as the game progresses. And I had never considered actually doing this, but this is something you do.
I've done it multiple times. Let me tell you the start. This all started with
creating... Break it down for me, Luke.
I'm going to break it down
with
right here.
With a funky bass line.
I thought I had to edit that.
Yeah, I did too.
This all started with keeping track of things via web page. When I first moved to St. Louis and started running a few games, I realized that I have very minimal technical skills, but a good place for people to talk about the game and update themselves on NPCs, locations, what's happened, is to run just a web page. And I think the first one I made for my Ruins campaign is actually still up somewhere on the web.
It's up on the Wayback Machine.
No, it's actually still up. I haven't taken it down before. It's
on Sevi Forum.
It's on
user.
GeoCities. I don't think they'll find it.
Oh, GeoCities.
Yeah, I know. It's awesome. I even have a free forum on there that's crap. It's pretty awesome.
I'm excited.
But that's where it started at. And I like the concept because people could actually look at stuff. We had character portraits. We had all the fun stuff that you find on a campaign website. And then when I ran my vampire campaign, I found a little tool called a personal brain for the PC, which was kind of like a wiki before wikis were around. I think it's probably still around. It's a little freeware program where you can basically break off thoughts into groups like, okay, well, these are my vampires in this covenant, this covenant, this covenant, this covenant. I click on covenants, it pops out all these, and that goes down to the individual vampires and so on and so
on.
Then
you click on live journal to get all the emo poetry for your vampire campaign.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
exactly.
Right there.
And you got to learn how to put the face paint on, right? Then that all came up into, basically, I liked how that worked, but it was hard to find stuff because it wasn't searchable.
Right.
And then I was introduced to wikis, and then quickly introduced how easy it was to edit a wiki.
Well, see, I guess with a wiki, my concern would be the searchability is wonderful. Mm-hmm. I mean, finding things will be quick and easy. If it's set up right, everything's going to link so beautifully that once you find that NPC, you've got links right there to his family or his friends or his allegiances or whatever. And it's real easy to quickly find the information you want. But it strikes me that the problem there would be getting the information in there. That in order to get it in there while you're running the game, you've got to be...
Oh, no. Stop right there. I didn't mean to imply that. I'm not putting this on during the game. Okay. I'm translating my notes. There's no way I can do that during the game.
So how are you doing that then? Are you taking notes in the margins and compiling them after the game?
Yeah, usually I take notes, just like you said, kind of in the margins and as I go. And then after the game, I almost always write up a session report so I know what happened while the memory is still fresh. And from that, I'll put what I need to into the wiki.
Huh. Do you let players edit it?
I haven't actually got that far. One's for a game that I was going to run and haven't. The other one is for a game. Renegade Horizon game, which players could edit their character. I think they could edit anything, but they didn't.
That'd be my one concern is, depending on the software, I'd want to limit, and I don't know if the softwares would even support this, which is why I say depending on the software, I'd want to limit who can see what. Because, for example, the players mm-hmm. may know that a particular NPC is the merchant in this town, and he acts like this and whatever. But
he's a vampire.
But yeah, but I know he's actually a vampire, and I want that on the wiki so I can find it. Like, oh yeah, this dude's a vampire. I got to remember that, maybe drop some hints. But I don't want the players going home and, you know, or in the middle of the game looking up this NPC and like, holy crap, he's a vampire. Kill him.
You know, there might be software that does that, but I don't know of it. I mean, when I've done it, if I need something like that, I'll just have links that I won't show to, I won't have up there. I'll know the pages are made, but I won't link to it anywhere.
Or I guess keep it only for yourself. But I guess the thing this adds that I've never really thought about before or considered in the life cycle of a GM, because I always think about a GM's work cycle as being two stages. You prepare for the game, you run the game. You prepare for the game, you run the game.
No, I'm a three-stage guy.
Yeah, I definitely would have gone with a post-game cleanup.
You're talking about a third stage.
I agree with you, Dan.
You prepare for the game, you run the game, now you go home, review your notes, do a session write-up, fill out your wiki, whatever it is you choose to do, and basically you do a post-game work session before you start preparing for the next game.
For me, this is a requirement for the game. The way I run games, like we say, player-driven or sandbox, because the PCs are driving everything, I need to know, I need to review everything they've done, have that handy so I can see what they're going to be doing next time, so I can have that prepared.
Huh.
Since I don't, you know, it's not always the linear path of a module or an adventure series. They could be doing anything. I could have 5 or 6 different threads going, and I need quick access to knowledge about all the PCs, everything that's going, and NPCs, organizations, and I need to access that fast, and the wiki lets me do that.
I think personally, at least for the style of games I run, that keeping organized notes, you know, being prepared in advance to take notes, as I said earlier, is still probably the best way to go. But I'm gonna have to chew on what you said, because you've actually thrown out something new for me, and I'm gonna have to chew on that for a bit and see if I can come up with some way that I could use that, or even maybe that for me sparks some new line of thought I'd never considered before. Look, that if I had that third step to GMing, is there a really easy way to organize these notes I never thought of? Modules.
What about them?
All right.
I plan on running one.
The Sunless Citadel.
I ran that Sunless Citadel.
I did too.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Okay. Now we're back on subject.
You fight a tree.
Wait to spoil it, John.
Oh, crap. It's 8 years old. Dan, what do you want?
All right.
There's no statute limitation on spoilers for modules, because anybody can play them at any time. Three is not over.
If you were a good enough GM, you would maybe not run it with the tree, because you knew a player or listened to Fear the Boot.
Well, see, I have first edition modules in there, and I don't ever run them, but I do sometimes slip through them for inspiration and little subplot ideas. I find, honestly, gaming art is a great inspiration to me when I'm trying to think of plot points that...
I can't tell you how much the simplest picture has given me in the way of, oh my god, the guy has a Stein and a sword, and the dragon has a keg.
Movies as well, that like, before I run a Star Trek campaign, I'll put in like one or two of the Star Trek movies, and the campaign will have nothing in common with the movies, but it just puts me in that mindset to where I start coming up with Star Trek-ish ideas, and...
Star Trek-ish.
I love gaming art too.
The Enterprise is on a planet.
Star Trekulent.
Something they can't figure out. Oh, they figured it out.
Move on.
Yep. Or watch DS9. Luke, you were saying?
I was saying I like gaming art too. My biggest problem with gaming art is when gaming art, and D&D is probably the biggest offender here, is that when the art shows stuff that the players can't do. I hate that. shows things like that. Man, no, those characters in that picture are doing some awesome things.
When do they do that in D&D?
I can't cite you in a specific example, but flip through something and see. I don't ever remember
Luke,
that happening.
Luke, one day you'll understand. Gentle listeners, could you please come up with supporting arguments for Luke's assertion?
I just know how I feel, and that's how I feel, and I'm going to make that fact.
All right.
Feeling to fact, the Meyer way.
Dr. Meyer Wiener.
Yes, it's like the little subtitle of your eye doctor practice?
Of my autobiography.
Oh, okay.
I always wanted to steal someone else's subtile for my autobiography.
Dr. Mutton
Chops. John G., Born to Run.
My favorite.
John G., No Direction Home.
John G., All the Little Pieces.
Man's grasp should always exceed his reach. The Luke Meyer story.
All right, anyway, modules. I got an email from a guy named Logan. Who sent his email? Maybe it was a private message. I don't know.
I have an email from him, too, that I haven't responded to. Shame on me.
Well, shame on me, too. I'm so far behind on everything, emails included, that...
I'm not either.
I used to always say that, you know, I try to do 24-hour turnaround these emails a week at worst. I have dropped the bomb big time. I am still in catch-up mode from Gen Con. You would not believe the amount of things I'm still struggling to catch up on. But that's way off subject here. But if you sent me an email and you're wondering why you haven't gotten a response yet, it will come eventually. It's just Dan needs a secretary. But we're working on that. We're working on that, actually, because Luke's going to take over some of the general mailbox stuff to lighten my load a little bit.
Oh, I'll lighten your load.
Share the load.
All right. So the email, private message, whatever I got from Logan, I copied and pasted into a text file that I used for the show notes, so I can't tell where it came from. But the question he asked was this. He basically was referring to modules as they relate to a role-playing game and said that the general response that he gets from most people is that they kind of poo-poo modules, that kind of like I just did, that I said, well, I might flip through them for a little bit of inspiration, but would I ever run a module? No, probably not. I sit down and write my own original campaigns, and I don't like modules because they're not flexible. They're not tailored to my party.
Oh, BS. You can bend modules however you want to.
Well, and that's kind of... He basically makes a twofold point. The twofold point he makes is this. One, He says, well, actually threefold. Let's start at the start.
All right, back it up.
Oh, Dan 2.
I know.
Dan 2. All three.
Yes, in the new Dan math, 2 and 3 are the same number.
It's like the Repertory couple. That's the Baker's one. Dozen. You got the Repertory couple, so only 3.
Man, I need to tell Carl about this.
Very nice.
But this marriage should have 3 people involved. Man, I got to start shopping. But anyway.
No one wants more than one wife.
No.
No. I don't understand polygamy.
The biggest argument, the argument against polygamy is, man, if you've got one, what are you thinking wanting
two? Why would you ever want two?
Yes. But anyway, the first point he makes is he says this, it's been his observation that the systems that put out a lot of modules are the ones that tend to be around for a while. Okay?
True.
Sounds true to me. Don't know if it's accurate.
No, it's accurate.
Ryan Dancy's probably yelling something at his whatever.
He's yelling it's accurate.
Yeah, he's yelling something right now. We don't know what, but they believe it's accurate. The second point that he made is that there are people out there, and he lumped himself in this category, who prefer running from these modules just for whatever reason. You know, it's easier than writing your own game. You don't have time to write your own game. You're having writer's block. You're not a very creative person to begin with.
The module is probably balanced, whereas something you might pull up might not be.
You know,
I prefer to run modules.
It's certainly a lot less work.
Any number of those.
That's a good reason.
And the third thing he brings up is he says that for people, and once again, I'll include myself in this, that kind of poo-poo the modules in most cases. If that's the case, then he says that on multiple occasions, he has asked people who kind of poo-poo modules, well, if you've got all these great games you've written, and this is not a challenge, but this is just a request.
Sounds like a challenge to me.
Would you please put them together into some form where I can, you know, look at your ideas or run it, because I myself am not that good or don't have enough time or whatever the case is to come up with these modules of my own, and usually the person never does.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the thing. First of all, is it fair to poo-poo modules so much?
No, I don't think it is. I think that if I were to tell you I was running a module, you'd walk into it and say, oh, this is going to be crap.
Well,
if I didn't tell you, you probably wouldn't know.
I have two big concerns with module. Concern number one is they are not tailored directly to the group. That, for example...
Hold on. If you run the module straight through, just reading straight down the list, I agree.
We'll come back to that.
Okay, good.
We'll come back to the solution here in a second. But issue one is it's not tailored directly to the group. And I mean that in two ways. That you could have...
One, you didn't write it.
Well... The players, it may not fit the players' play style.
That's what I'm saying. You didn't write it.
But also on top of it, it may not fit the characters. That the characters may have something in their background to be really cool to work in as the subplot or draw them into this.
That's GM's choice there. You don't pick a module that won't work for the characters. I mean, who's going to do that?
No. Hold on. Because the first stage in this process is you pick the module you're going to run, isn't it?
Well, it
might be.
Hang on. You
can have an ongoing campaign. The D&D modules are written.
Are you running a module as a standalone, or are you running a module throwing it into a campaign? Like,
right.
Dan, there's different ways to do
it.
Because I know people that have run campaigns where they keep the same characters, but they start off with a first through third level module and then grab a second through fifth level module.
If it's part of the campaign, then I can agree with you.
Right.
If it's a standalone.
No, standalone, I agree.
There's no reason that the character...
Are you guys talking about a one-shot?
No,
standalone,
we're not.
Not part of an overarching campaign.
Because this problem disappears.
Where does that happen?
A lot.
There's a lot of people who will just run a module.
You are going to play one.
Yeah.
If you have a one-shot module, my first argument disappears because you're right. You should be creating the characters based on the module.
I agree. Okay.
But
all right. So as long as we're clear on that.
If you have a campaign that is running along where all you're doing is module after module after module for your plot line, which is fine, then my first concern would be this stuff may not be tailored to the players or the characters.
Right. It will be inconsistent.
Right.
All right. I agree with that.
My one complaint now seems to be a little bit muted because evidently it's accepted fact. It's that using and overusing modules make your campaign seem very episodic. And I don't necessarily like that. I want one plot line. I just complained at Next Generation for doing that.
That's a fair complaint as well. I've run some games that were intentionally episodic and worked out well, but I understand why some people would not like that. Personally, my second complaint is the ever-present fear someone at the table
has read
the module or played the module before. And that's not a big concern in my current group because...
I don't read modules.
We don't read modules.
And you don't run modules.
Yeah, and I don't run modules. But I, in the past, particularly like in high school and such, when I was running D&D, I had this happen a few times where I would try to go run a module, and I had people in the gaming group that were far bigger D&D collectors than I were, and they had the module sitting on their shelves.
You know what that means? swift punishment. When he starts looking for that hidden ring that nobody should know is there, he doesn't find the ring.
All right.
Or he finds a cursed ring.
So let's start with that. If you're running a module, customization.
Yeah, I think if you just ran a straight module, that's just ridiculous.
Well, let's give some hows. How specifically, if I put a module in front of you, how specifically, or could you customize this?
I will almost assuredly change the main villain and the nature of his plot to fit in with what I'm doing.
I think right there, you're kind of hitting on something that is maybe somewhere between running a module and I talked about earlier, drawing inspiration. Yeah,
cannibalizing.
Where you cherry pick it. You take that module, you read it cover to cover, you don't run the module, but you draw very, very heavily from it.
Use all the maps and all the physical settings.
Yeah.
I do every time.
The basic timeline of events and whatever, but you customize the individual places, the individual names, the type of bad guy, change some plot points around until really this might as well have been your own original adventure to begin with. You just never had to chase down the inspiration for the basic theme or idea behind the module.
Yeah, I don't know. We're getting to that gray area where I still consider that running the module.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah,
I think if you
take
the whole setting and just populate it differently, which is essentially what I do when I run a module, you've run the module.
Here's what a module allows you to do. It allows you to focus on running your NPCs, focus on the story, because everything is already laid out. You don't have to do the work. You just have to learn it. And
customize where necessary.
Yeah, customize as you go. You can customize every NPC. You can add in all the flavor you want because you're only doing a third or less of the work you would as if you had to create the thing from scratch.
It's a lot easier to scratch things I think are stupid and then move on, which I like.
The most recent modules that I can think of having personally run were two for Battletech. There was one called Unbound and one called Null Set. I think it's called Null Set. It's called Null Something.
Null Set, gross.
And I ran both of those. And I can recall that when I ran them, that what I did is pretty close to what we're describing here, that I ran the module pretty much as it was written. But I remember going page by page through it before I ran it. And I took a pencil and I just marked it up 10 ways to Sunday. Normally, I don't write all over my books. I'm one of those people that it's just a big no-no to me. I don't write in my books. But with these two modules, man, I just marked them up where I said, oh, hey, Texas character could really kind of fit in here. Or I scratched out an NPC they had and said, you know, there's an NPC from the last campaign that I could play the same role and I could have him recur to give a sense of continuity.
Yeah.
In
the zombie module I'm going to run, there was a section where you come up upon these crazy Baptists who are eating people. And I was like, this is just stupid.
Gone. I ran a module called Dragon Mountain once. It was a big old box set back in the second edition.
I remember Dragon Mountain.
And it killed the crap out of my parties repeatedly. There was even a little paragraph in the handbook that was like, your guys are high level, so go ahead and try to kill them. No, they didn't understand. It's like, pit trap, spiky death, instant, roll saving throw. You failed it by more than two, you're dead.
I haven't run a module I'll get to that in a minute, but I've played in some very good modules. Hackmaster redid Keep on the Borderlands, the original D&D module, and flushed out, made it a basically miniature campaign setting with a ton of stuff going on, and the DM ran that, and we ran that for 3 years real time, I think. It was phenomenal. It was a great time, and we still didn't see everything. We left before we were done. We're like, okay, we're kind of... Their stuff is
3 years.
I know, 3 years.
It's like twice as long as the longest campaign we've sustained.
Yeah, we ran Hackmaster went for 3.5 years, and then we started switching up to other games. I ran some Buffy, some Angel was run, some GURPS.
You ran some. Never mind.
Yeah,
you know, I like you, Luke.
With modules,
I am going to get you. We've been through this time and again.
Well, you told me last episode.
Don't bring that up.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay.
All right,
well, trouble.
Another concern with modules, and of course, I realize some of this depends on where you get the modules from. But particularly years ago, when I was still running modules, one of the issues or one of the concerns that I had was limited financial supply. That if you want to get set up playing a game, you go out and buy basic core rule books. And I don't know, let's just for a round number say you spend $50 for the core rule book or rule books. Okay, whatever. But then if every single week you take a module, and most modules may only last 1 or 2 weeks, maybe three, and you've got to go out every time you want to run a game and buy a new module, especially if you guys game on a consistent basis, like let's say once a week, you're going to pretty quickly do one of two things, either run out of money or run out of available material.
You know what now, I haven't run out of? Internet access.
Well, yep. Now I was going to say,
I've got the best part about this,
Luke bought a Savage Worlds.
Well, I was going to say that this may no longer be an issue because in the age of the internet, there are so many people out there that publish their campaigns.
D&D, or, Wizards puts out free module material. It's not like, oh, I'm being sneaky on Napster and stealing the crap. It's on WotC.com. Right.
Well, not only that, I mean, modules generally, if you're running the ones that are only going to last a few sessions, aren't expensive. You're looking at $9 or $10. And the entertainment value, I mean, hour-wise, compared to like going to a movie, it's not a big investment.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's say...
Especially if you split it between the group. Like,
well, that's
hey, guys,
gaming
chip
as a
in.
Hobby.
Let's take it $10, and let's say you've got five people and it lasts two sessions. I mean, what? That's 50 cents a person a setting?
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you can divide that by hours, too. Well, with your cents per hour of entertainment.
Well, before we get into doing cost-benefit analysis on modules...
Yeah, I'm in.
But,
we just did.
Yeah, I think we just did. But anyway, yes, in the age of the internet, I don't think you have the problem anymore of cost running out of material, because there are so many people that run websites for their campaigns, run podcasts for their campaigns, they put out freebie modules, that I think really the challenge that I see here is that we within the gaming community just need to share a little more. That if you've got a great idea for a campaign or you ran a great campaign, I mean, heck, you don't need to write it all up, but put a couple pages together and stick it up on some site for download and say, hey, you know, somebody else is looking for a module to run. Here's at least, you know, I understand if you don't want to write 100 pages and hire an artist and a layout guy to do it all.
I used to narrate our games.
But write out two or three pages or something and say, look, hey, here's kind of a synopsis of what we did. Somebody else ought to consider running this. And if you've got questions about it, feel free to mail me.
I have a free module on the internet that has art made for it and all kinds of stuff. It was published through Dragon's Foot. It was an introductory D&D adventure I wrote, which is, I mean, it's really simple. It's made for as an intro, but it was published through there. And I still get emails about it, which is kind of cool.
Dr. Luke original.
I have never published a module. I did back when I was still writing for BattleTech. I did get a few scenarios published, which I guess given the length of a BattleTech map combat, that might as well be a module, but it was not a module in the typical sense that it didn't involve characters or
the Atlas
line.
Walked up to the catapult and pulled out its pistol, pointed right at Ted, and said, "You surrender now, catapult."
It was more at situations, you know, that here's the two forces, here's their objectives, here's kind of the weird rules that make the combat unique and whatever. But one of the things that he asked us about was this Logan guy that wrote us said that when we first started talking about SOG, one of his first questions is, were we going to put out modules for it? And it's funny that he brings that up, because originally I never thought about it. It's not per se that I was against it or had this firm no, but I just never thought about it.
It's funny that he emailed us around now, because Luke and I were talking about this last week before we sent this email.
We've got ideas.
Right. One of the things we're talking about doing and trying to release, and I hope to have it released by now, but it's just my con cleanup has been a total disaster. But one of the things we're talking about doing is releasing the tier one beta rules that we ran at Gen Con along with the module that Chris Hussey wrote.
Yeah, Chris.
For the game.
Whoa.
And so basically having a nice little downloadable resource packet that might be 10, 20, 30 pages long that has all the rules you need to play at least tier one. It won't have tier two or tier three, but a tier one game complete with module. So I guess maybe that's something that we should take into our thinking, is just because I don't use modules doesn't mean nobody does. And we should take module and scenario writing more seriously as we develop the game.
Luciatis and I have ideas.
We've had big ideas.
You tell me the ideas, but what was the general gist of your conversation?
Different ways to do modules, so they're not as modular. Something else I can talk about.
Okay. We can talk about that offline.
Modules, the big problem with modules, something we already covered, is that you want to have something where you don't have to do the work, but you want something that's customizable, something tailored to the group. And right in between there, somewhere in the middle, is the best solution I found, actually. And that's how I ran my Necessary Evil campaign, because we talked about this in the interview with Shane Hensley, which isn't out yet. But we talked about plot points, which we didn't really get into and describe. And this plot point campaign they have in there is basically they have the adventures listed out for your main meta arc. You know, here's the story of the campaign. And then they have 25, 30, 35 other adventures in there that you can use, and you can use your own stuff because you run this as you're coming on it. And these aren't fully fleshed out adventures. These are skeletons. You get the enemies, you get the setup, you get the NPCs, maps, everything you need, and you can tailor it to your group because you have probably 70% of the work done, and you just have, you brush up on it, tailor it to the group, bam, you're done. It's you get basically half a module and half of your campaign. Mesh it all together, and you get the plot point. And it's worked out really well, because I had extremely little prep time, which I love. And the players loved it because it was their campaign. You know, so we went way off the tracks, and it was still very little prep time because it's so easy to take, okay, well, I need the villain from this adventure. I like the setup here. I like this map. Bam. It's all right there.
Star Wars D20 has something kind of like that on the website, but it makes no sense. It's like, so-and-so gets kidnapped. There are huts involved. To solve the situation, you'll have to defeat the Empire. Is it one of those, what?
Is it one of those random generators?
Yeah, yeah. There's five variables, and it rolls them all. And
I've seen random plot generators like that, and I don't think they're useful because I think they're the worst of both worlds.
They are the worst of many worlds as you can think of.
I say the worst of both worlds because they have all of the woodenness of the absolutely worst written module imaginable, and at the same time lack all of the information you need to actually create the campaign, so you might as well write it yourself anyway. Yep. Well,
what I did was I refreshed the generator so much that I got most of what the variables were, and then I put some together that I liked, and then I had a mission.
I say because it's, somebody gets kidnapped by the Hutt. Well, who and how and why and how will defeating the Empire solve this? And it, like I said, it's so wooden and yet so lacking in details. You have the absolute worst of both worlds.
Let me emphasize that the plot point campaign is not like that. It's not random. You just have a lot to pick from, and you have most of the work done for you. It's nice. It's beautiful.
And the plot point campaign, just to be specific here, we're not talking about the common noun of plot point. We're talking about the proper noun of plot point, which is a proprietary idea of Pinnacle Games.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they can claim it, but they certainly promote it. I don't know. They may or may not have made it up, but it's in virtually all their campaigns.
They
settings.
Use it. We don't know. Maybe they didn't invent it. There's probably somebody, some indie gamer who developed it who's just through their iPod.
Or they might have because they got good minds over there.
All right. Point is, they use it. Whether they made it or not, they use it.
And use it to really, really good effect, I might add.
Okay. So now that you're actually done, now I'll get back to my two transitional thoughts. One of them is regarding a comment I made in passing during, I believe, episode 70 or 71. I think it was 71.
No, that you were drunk.
I didn't expect. I just made in passing and thought nothing of it. But I have gotten a shocking number of emails and forum posts regarding this.
What is it, long hair?
Which is the mention that I made of an Ultima role-playing game that I was dorking
people
around.
People really
with.
Do seem to like that.
I was surprised. I just mentioned
Ultima was a very popular
series. You know, people who are listening to this podcast, a large majority of them probably played an Ultima game.
Let's talk about Vendor it, but then give the no more information.
I thought nobody'd care because it's like, you know, I've mentioned throughout the course of this podcast numerous games that I've written.
And every single time people ask you for more detail.
But, but typically it's just a couple people. Like with Skies of Glass, obviously a lot of people have asked because we're slowly, snail's pace here, moving towards making a publishable product. We've run demos of it. I understand why people ask about it. With Epoch of Riso / Danverse, I've had a couple people that are really into science fiction write me and say, hey, I'd love to play a game of this at a con, or I'd love to see what you've got on it, or you know, talk to you as you develop it, or whatever. But it's not this big wave of response. But after I mentioned that Ultima thing, I mean, I have just gotten this completely unexpected flood of response that I didn't think anyone would. This comment.
Would you say you've gotten an energy vortex of responses?
Oh, come on.
Perhaps even
an earthquake?
At least a lightning strike.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So what are you going to do about it?
Well,
I'm flipping through the design notes right now.
Basically, I am flipping between my eight virtues right now and trying to figure out two things, which is one, because people have been asking me to see what I had on that, so I'm curious about two things, which is one,
dost thou compassionately make crap up, or honestly claim that you had nothing to begin with?
Well, no, the honest truth is I really did have some stuff, but I'm trying to figure out, and here comes the honesty side, is that legal?
Then you're a paladin.
If you put it out for free, it should be. What, I mean, there's been a lot of RPGs based on role-playing games, computer role-playing games are out. Like, I mean, there's several free Final Fantasy role-playing games out.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Richard Garriott is a
pretty big on the
idea. He has a castle.
Yeah, he's an unusual person. I'll just leave it at that. So if there's somebody that was going to chase me around.
Look, just put a T in front. Call it Toltima. And then just change everything a little bit around so it's not the same thing. You can't copyright game mechanics.
You're a avatar.
You can't copyright game mechanics.
Church shoes by a tipsy.
But you can only copyright the ideas, but the game mechanics themselves can't be copied.
Right,
so
Richard Garriott has some pretty working eyeshadow on.
The second question I have is right now, given the fact that I can't even keep up on things like email, do I have the time to get this all put down?
The answer is no.
And not until you get our cast bio page out.
So, yeah, there's also those bio pages I'm supposed to be doing.
Someone was on my ass for 7 months about that, and then I get it to them.
It wasn't me?
What?
Yeah, I always know. Given the fact how perpetually overbusy I am the last person in the world's going to write anybody's ass about anything. So, no, well, you show me the forum posts where I did anything but say, hey, just out of curiosity, what's going on with this? You show me one post.
You're stifling me.
I know.
And you're stifling John.
Yeah, by existing.
Sorry about that.
The second kind of follow-up thought I had on that was kind of along the lines of...
Have you still not got the second thought out?
Well, if is this the Dan 2 or the real 2?
I think I zoned out there. I thought you actually talked about it, but we're still
quiet, Tavatar.
The first point was about Tultima.
Took tire.
And I think one of the reasons it surprised me is because I've mentioned so many times games like the Transformers game that I wrote that nobody asked about. But anywho, the second thing is along the lines of the podcast and the resource documents and all that stuff. I've had a couple people ask.
Resource documents? That's funny. Yeah. We haven't had one of those in 60
No,
episodes.
We haven't. But there's one coming up, but a big one at that. But the point is that obviously we put out this show for free. We don't run commercials. We don't ask for donations. Unless we're working with a charitable cause outside of ourselves. So if you guys ever want to kind of give back to the boot and do something in return for us, the one and
only... Send a check.
The only thing that we can ask for
from me.
Is spread the word.
Burgers and beer.
Is spread the word. Tell your friends.
I guess that works too.
Well, tell your friends about the show, and also along the lines of spread the word, give us positive feedback. If you listen to us via iTunes or Yahoo Podcasts or whatever, take 30 seconds to go on there and write a review about us and, you know, suggest us as a podcast for other people. Just do what you can to kind of help get the word out. That's all we ask.
Somebody made themselves a fan of me on Dig, and the other hosts were jealous. Somebody make them feel good.
I didn't know that was possible.
I didn't know it was possible.
I thought it was spam.
I don't even think I'm on
Dig.
If
I didn't have the LSAT in less than 48 hours, that would be my number one priority in life. Dig fans.
I'll be your fan, John.
Oh, thanks, Adam.
I didn't know there was Dig fans either.
I didn't either.
I can't say this deeply moves me, but...
Shout out to Vandermore for Dig fanning me.
I'm far more interested in two things. One is growing the download numbers, and the second is, like I said, you know, if you guys like the show, then just get out there and leave us a positive review. If you don't, then just pretend you didn't hear the last few minutes of talk.
Or else you'll be that guy on YouTube.
Someone was asking us to give our favorite and least favorite game mechanic. And I'm gonna hold off on the least favorite right now. But I'm going to give you my favorite. And my favorite is from Battletech.
No surprise.
It's Edge. For those of you who've not played Battletech and don't know what Edge is basically a reroll. That at the start of every game, you have a certain number of Edge, and each Edge represents a reroll. Or if the dice go 2 or I, you can reroll. Now, why do I like this? Because of the fact that it protects the players from being quickly screwed by simply a run of bad luck with the dice. I know for some people, that's an attraction to gaming, that they like the wildness of dice, spring to it where you throw down that die and it could be anything from the bad guy's decapitated to you fall on your own sword. And some people like that. But I personally like giving the players some way to avoid being destroyed by...
I think most players who like that have GMs who will fudge the dice for them when they're not looking.
So I like the Edge mechanic. If I had to pick a number two, it would be the dark side mechanic in D20 Star Wars. Particularly the earlier run of D20 Star Wars before Saga Edition, I love the way they handled the dark side in that.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Beautifully done. Wonderfully
done.
I'm
kind of sad it's gone, and I'm probably just going to go ahead and implement it anyway, despite the fact that it's not there.
Honestly, the second run, or the kind of 1.5 version of D20 Star Wars where they cleaned up all the rules, I love it, and that is probably the one I will continue to run for quite a while. The only thing that sucks in it is ship combat, so I'll just won't use its system for ship combat, but I love the way it handles.
There's actually a defined way you can use force powers, unlike the original.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
My favorite mechanic is Thaco.
Really?
It's beautiful.
Good old two-hit armor class zero?
You are damn right.
You know, people who complain about that, I never understand.
Okay,
it's easy
beautiful.
Math.
My favorite mechanic is not actually Thaco. Thaco's ridiculous.
I like it.
I was curious.
It's really Ben Barr's lift gates. No, it's not that.
What about having a percentile for strength but for nothing else?
That's what I'm talking about. Extraordinary strength or exceptional strength or whatever it is. That'll jack your Ben Barr's to like 8% if you have 18.
Stalling because you haven't thought of something yet.
Exactly.
So I'll go then. I've got a couple. One would be Instincts from Burning Wheel. You know all those things you always say to the GM? Hey, my character's doing this. Hey, my character... Or my character was doing this. I just didn't say it. You know how that pops up quite a bit? You know, my character had a gun on him.
No, I always declare an action.
Look, I have a gun on me. I always carry a gun on me. And it's something you've never said.
I'm a hard ass as a GM about that stuff. But go on.
Well, that's what you have. In that, you have instincts where you write down... You get three instincts of stuff that you are always doing, even if you don't say it. Like... I always carry a knife on me, or I always check for traps on a door before I open it.
I cast Mordenkainen's Magical Watchdog.
Yeah, or if you are, if I am surprised, I cast this spell.
I forget about
which works in their magic,
now.
Which works with their system. But I always thought that was like a fantastic way of player protection.
It does seem like a good neutral ground because, like I said, I'm kind of a hard ass about that. Where if a player comes up with something they just so happen to have or so happen to always be doing that conveniently defeats this plot point, they better be ready with a justification, because I'm a firm believer there are certain things we just accept in a role-playing game. Like, for example, you go to the bathroom. But outside of stuff like that, if it's like, oh, I have a gun on me that you never told me about before, it's like, no, you did not have any gun.
Well,
on
this
you.
Is written down so that'll never happen. Right. So if you forget to say, oh, crap, I didn't bring my gun this time,
but
I didn't say anything.
You declare it in sort of a ubiquitous way.
Exactly.
Just always, all right, I follow. John?
Mana points. Where the hell are they? Are
no
we still
kidding,
seriously
man.
Memorizing spells by level?
Thank you.
It's 2007.
Where the hell is the MP
Fourth
pool?
Edition, please.
You know what's funny please. About this? You know what I find ironic about this? Is the one man sitting here at the table who's a very strong Shadowrun fan and apologist. You know what one of my favorite features of Shadowrun is? The organic magic system. D&D has an inorganic magic system. You memorize spells by level, you cast a spell, but it really feels like the spell has nothing to do with you. There's no mana pool. It's not really based on your attributes outside of maybe the DC save on it. But in Shadowrun, when you cast a spell, I mean, it comes straight from your attributes. It drains your attributes as you cast it. You know, everything about that spell is based on who you are as a person.
I've never played Shadowrun.
Well, I'm not talking about that because Shadowrun sucks.
Right. I love that. Is one of my favorite mechanics in Shadowrun is the organic magic system.
This
they
is
use.
Not your third
I'm
favorite
I'm talking
mechanic.
About yes. having to make the decision between blowing your whole mana pool on this one huge Ultima spell, this meteor or whatever, and saving it up for some lower, more moderate ones, rather than having, oh, well, I have 9 iterations of Cure 1 today. Hooray.
Hoorah.
I agree with you, though.
Sweet.
Adam?
I'm going to go with the Battletech Mercenaries Handbook. So all the rules that let you do the operational games, the logistics
okay.
and stuff.
Campaign management.
Yeah.
I loved
all those rules.
I love campaign management in general. That's something I've spoken about before.
That's something I've noticed is lacking in, not all, but a lot of role-playing games, is they give you a lot of tools to run the individual sitting, but they don't give you a lot of tools to draw the sittings together.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that the rules were perfect, because they weren't.
But as long as it works, you can fiddle with it.
Prepped in a paperwork and.
But you know, they at least they gave you the information. So yeah. if you wanted to do things,
they gave me numbers.
Yeah,
which is what I wanted
to know. Things like.
Now, let's be frank. You love gamer paperwork too.
No, I love gamer paperwork. Okay. I wish more people in the group loved gamer paperwork with me. But
I'm with you, Adam.
I know, but
no
we've never
problem.
Played a map game.
I know. And
gamer paper, were you talking about just keeping track of stuff?
Well, but like,
or?
For example,
man, you have no
in
idea.
Mercenaries,
when we started playing it, the amount of spreadsheets I have was ridiculous.
You play Battletech Mercenaries. You have stuff like, you have support personnel mm-hmm. that may include even things like a legal team, and they have salaries you pay. When you show up on planet, when your dropship's put down, here's what it costs, fuel-wise, to land that dropship. And when you come off, here's the supplies you have with you. And as your mech's blown up, here's the number of hours it takes to repair them. And then you cross off the supplies you have. So there's a continuity from game to game.
See, when you buy equipment, it's never the same price.
Yeah.
Because there's just no place you can go to get
this
mech.
Is why this part guy is neck deep into EVE Online 2 seconds after looking at it.
Oh, my God. I've already built an application.
Part of me, I got no life.
It's all
enjoys that. Part of me likes that, too. But I found in game it doesn't work too well. It ends up being... It gets way too focused. And it's like accounting. I like it more abstract.
I
like it abstracted.
Here's the point.
That's the best thing about being a programmer. I'm writing a program to track it
right.
for me.
Here's the point, though.
I love it.
Well, let's hold the conversation right here, because I think this topic we just hit upon is probably a major topic in and of itself. Campaign mechanics.
Do we have to stop now?
Yes. Wait. But I think the general thing we can stop at here is...
We could end it on a cliffhanger for the first time ever.
Is what Adam is saying... Thank you for tuning in. We'll see. No. What Adam is saying is that, correct me if I'm wrong, but what you liked about Mercenaries is the campaign rules. And I will agree that, I think so many games lack that. They don't have the rules for the campaign as a whole. they have the rules for the individual
settings.
It sounds
to me like
sessions.
You need to make a campaign rule set.
I'm thinking.
Do you know how many times I've tried and failed?
Dude,
okay, we're talking about this.
We're going to talk about it next time.
Look, I have one more thing to talk about, though, because you cut me off earlier. Because right. You got a second favorite. I want a second favorite.
Is it Unicron?
My second favorite is dots. I love dots. Like in World of Darkness, I love filling in dots on sheets. I don't know why I love
what
it,
the hell?
But I do. BattleTech too. I love BattleTech because
I was mentally torn between damage over time spells and the ice cream of the future, and it was neither.
Actually, what I was getting was the illicit drug. So
I love filling in dots on character sheets. I don't know what it is. BattleTech, World of Darkness,
dude.
I love it.
It takes me back to my days of doing Scantron.
Yeah, I was about to say. You want to take my LSAT?
Maybe that's what it is. But I find it relaxing and fun.
Ours were rectangles.
It's a great visual representation.
Ours were all ovals.
Rectangles. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, ours are all.
What?
It's like
every that time flies I play against the rectangle order of the Scantron.
Every time I play World of Darkness, I double check to make sure my pencil's number two. But no, I have no problem with dots.
I love the graphical representation. You just pick it up, look at it, you can see right there. It's gorgeous. Okay. I love the dots.
Okay, I can't entirely argue with that.
You're thinking of the Mech Warrior sheets, aren't you? Filling in your little armor penetration dots.
See, in World of Darkness, it's a positive thing. In Mech Warrior, it's a negative. Oh, I got to fill the dots. I'm dying.
No, because I'm always the game master, so I want to see those dots come off, because that means the players are winning. But
if I'm filling in the dots? That means I'm playing Battletech.
Yeah.
That's true.
So, no, it's not that. All I can picture is myself sitting in the back of a lecture hall with a number two pencil filling out this little blue and white piece of paper. So,
I love math.
Anywho.
I hate math.
It out of the table, boys. I'm laying it out there.
You know what else I hate is anywho, and I keep saying it. So, anyhow.
You know what I hate is Fear the Boot episodes you can't end.
All right. Then this one will end right here, right now. And next time, we will talk about campaign rules. So, thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Goodbye.
Got it. This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2007, fully owned by its host. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.